You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Joining me now is the aviation explainer in chief on All Marine Radio. So on days like today, sadly he joins us, but Kurt Knowles joins us. What's going on, man? How are you?
Well, trying to catch up on all the news and media covering the crash. It's obviously always hard to read and trying to figure out what's going on. But
yeah
tough. Another tough morning for Marine Corps Aviation, obviously, and I was. Thoughts and prayers, much like the president and many other representatives have sent out, is you just thoughts and prayers of the families, of 16 Marines that went down. So
yeah.
It's kind of been a tough 24 hours for us.
You know, the before we talk about that, I just want to ask you, there's the story out of Hawaii where the FBI arrests this Army staff sergeant or sergeant first class, whatever he is, air traffic controller. In 2012, he lost his clearance for making pro-Islamic state statements while at work, on duty, and also threatening the lives of other soldiers. Okay, so here's my question. How do you come back from that one and stay in the Army for another 5 years?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well... You know, it doesn't surprise me. It's a culture thing, right? So, as the culture back then, you're afraid to say things out loud. You might offend somebody. Like, can we just call a spade a spade? He's you know, leaning extremist Islam. I would call that as an issue, and he probably should not be in our armed forces. That would be what I would recommend.
Okay, look, so, I'm just saying. If you said, "Hey, look, I think Japan's a cool country, and I'm totally down with them, and if you don't like that, you know, I'll kill you," how do you think that would have gone over back during the big one?
Yeah, not very well.
Do you think they would have? Do you think they would have sent you to the Force Preservation Council to be screened to see if they could help you?
They probably just used well. Obviously, what happened back then is they said, "Look, I know you said that, but you probably really didn't mean it, so we'll keep you on staff, we'll keep you on board."
What? Anyway, all right.
Wow.
First of all, let's talk about the C-130. C-130, one of the oldest airplanes in the inventory, but one of the safest, most reliable airframes in the inventory. Tell people who aren't familiar with the platform. Tell everybody a little bit about the C-130.
Well, the Marine Corps bought the C-130 way back in the 60s, but what people need to realize, and it's very important, is they have upgraded those C-130s and actually come out with essentially a brand new aircraft, brand new, and it's called the KC-130J, which was completely, you know, modified propellers and upgraded engines, state-of-the-art avionics. And those actually were the ones that we were flying around in Afghanistan, even back in 2010, 2011. Those were the KC-130Js.
The J model.
Right, so the J model. That's a brand new aircraft. I mean, that is right off the showroom floor. Those things are brand new. The Marine Corps does have some what we would call, they call them legacy Hercs, which is the, I believe it's a Tango variant, but it's essentially it's the older ones. And how it's kind of equipped to visually see them when they're parked in a line is they only have four blades on their engines, four propellers.
Got it.
Four blade propellers. Whereas the J, it looks almost like a blender. It's like the propellers have got, I think it's eight, and they're kind of all kind of, they've got a slight bend to them. I mean, a very unique style of propeller. It's very efficient and can basically grab a lot of air with these newer, stronger engines and bigger propellers. So
even somebody like me would notice the difference in the propeller optically.
Yeah, oh, obviously. I mean, just think of it like an X. It would be, or, you know, it's a true X, a four blade propeller, or it looks almost like a windmill, like a bunch of different propellers coming off. Like, it's just, it's really significant, you know, and plus they're the newer J models, those propellers are painted black, and then the old ones that, like the X style, the four blades, they're usually painted like a flat gray or a white, you know, with kind of a red tip to them. So it's very obvious. But, you know, just to put it in perspective, everyone, if I was sitting there going, well, what's the difference? A close friend of mine who flew for Fat Albert, which is the, you know, C-130 that's on the Blue Angels team, he said they would have the old legacy Hertz had what's called the Jato Assist. They were literally like these rocket engines that were mounted to the side of the fuselage, and they could hit the Jato, and it would accelerate the KC-130 away from the ground so they could take off from real short fields. Well, at an air show, it's always super impressive when they light off the Jato, because you've all of a sudden you got this, you know, four engine propeller plane with jet engines lighting off in the back of it. I mean, just from a show perspective, it was awesome. Well, those jet engines gave significant performance increase to take off from a short field.
Right.
So I'm asking my friend, I said, well, so what happens now that you guys are, everybody's getting the J's? Like, what's going to fly, God, how we're going to fly? What are they going to fly for the air shows? He's like, well, they'll go to the J. He goes, just to put it in perspective, we get the same amount of thrust with these new engines and new propellers that we would with those four engines and the Jato Assist. So that's
wow.
The difference of thrust. Yeah, yeah. That's how significant it is.
And if anybody's ever been to the Miramar Air Show or most of the shows that the Blue Angels put on, you will see the Jato, the jet-assisted takeoff that they do. It's very impressive. All of a sudden that thing goes, and it goes,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, you see this big lumbering down the runway, and all of a sudden they light that thing off, and it like goes, you know, it goes 45
like
degrees.
Like a Roman candle.
Right, it is. That's exactly right. That's exactly what it is. The talk about the reliability of the 130 platform. Period. I mean, it's one of the most reliable airframes.
Super reliable. It's surprising how strong it is, just from a maneuverability perspective. I mean, you can really maneuver it around as a big airplane. It's really overbuilt, and it's just super strong. Everybody loves them. You know, it's the workhorse. It's that 1975 pickup truck that's sitting out, you know, out in the backyard, just will not break down. You can throw everything in it and it just keeps on running. I mean, it's just the workhorse of the fleet that just runs and runs and runs with exception. I mean, you know what else is very, special about the Marine Corps in the C-130 community is their maintainers are literally considered to be one of the best. I mean, they just have this, they've kind of got this aura about them, this culture that they take such meticulous pride in their work. And the people that are inside the plane that are working as crew, it's the same way. I mean, they just know every little meticulous detail about their aircraft. They just really, because when you're flying fighters and stuff, you have to really focus on the tactical side and you know the aircraft well, but when you're worried about employing weapons and dropping bombs, you've got a lot of other things that are, your brain can only hold so much stuff. When you're flying C-130s, I mean, their aircraft is, that's what they're doing, right? They're in that aircraft flying transport missions, refueling other aircraft, and they just know that thing like the back of their hand, and their maintainers are the same way. They just know that thing meticulously. The way that they operate their squadrons, it's a very close fraternity. That they travel together, that maintainers will ride with the crews. It's just a very close community, especially in the Marine Corps. And it's special. It really is. It's a special place that the Marine Corps has, and flying these amazing aircraft that are just, the one thing if I was to say about the C-130, or we call it a KC-130 because it's always, we pride ourselves in the Marine Corps saying KC-130. Because it's a refueler as
right,
well. You
right.
do multiple different missions.
Right.
Well, if there's one thing about a KC-130, you're asking, like, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Strong. It's just strong. You know, it's just a strong aircraft that is so versatile. And to have something like this happen, you just wonder, like, what could have possibly happened for a four-engine aircraft to come out of the sky? Like, it's just something catastrophic happened, you know? So,
I've got an email for you. Hey, Mac, I read the news this morning, and certainly our thoughts and prayers go out to all the families involved in this. Simply devastating for them. 16 in that aircraft, is that normal? To me, it sounds more like they were moving packs than fuel, but I don't know anything about how that airplane is configured or how many people are needed to operate it. So do you know enough to walk us through the crew of a KC-130?
Well, it depends if it's the J model, the newer model variant, or the Legacy. The Legacy tends to have a couple more crew members. The updated J model, it has a little less. So I believe the J model has 4 crew members, the 2 pilots and 2 in the back, which is called crew chiefs or loadmasters.
Right.
And then the Legacy KC-130s typically have 5 or 6. They have like a navigator or a flight engineer, and then they'll have the 2 in the back. So I would say between 4 and 6 crew members are pretty standard. But to have 16, that's not unheard of in a squad. It could have all been squadron personnel, because they could have been going somewhere with a maintenance team,
right?
If that makes sense. Like,
no,
they travel like the family packs up and goes, you know, and they all work together as a big family. And if they're going somewhere for a week dead, or even a 2 week dead or something, they're operating somewhere, they'll take a maintenance team with them, you know. So they could have been transporting troops as well, or they could have been transporting their own personnel because they're going to go operate out of a location away from home, you know. So that's not unusual. Those things, I mean, you know how many people they can haul. I mean, it depends on how much gear you got, but 50, 60 people is not uncommon stuff that's out of a KC-130 with all their gear, you know. So to have 16 in there would be very reasonable for a squadron to be moving somewhere to operate out of for an extended period of time.
All right. Somebody sent me a map chip that shows exactly where they were. And because the question is, might they have been on their way to Naval Air Station Memphis Millington? On the map, it shows it well south of Memphis, and you know, on a line really headed for Dallas. So I'm not really sure the destination. The flight originated out of Cherry Point, Rudy?
Cherry Point.
Okay, fine.
I don't know what their flight plan had down.
Sure.
But they could have been going to Dallas. You know, there's a C-130 squadron and a KC-130 squadron in Dallas, a reserve squadron there. They could have, you know, I don't know where they were. I know they're just where they started from, but I don't know where they were going.
Okay, another email based on a statement you made. Hey, Mac, I'm trying to understand this. I'm not an aviator, but something Kurt said just made me think. How does a 4-engine aircraft have something like this happen to it? Typically, if you had engine problems, how many engines does something like that need to stay in the air? Rudy?
I have friends that fly this aircraft, and it can fly pretty well with 2 engines. So I would say that if you had an engine failure in a KC-130, you would just shut the engine down and you could be fine on 3 engines, especially at altitude. You know, we call it the critical phase of flight, which is takeoff and landing, you know, otherwise known as your terminal area. So the critical phase where you really want your most amount of thrust is obviously on takeoff or landing. And people go, well, landing, I'm coming in. Yeah, but what about your go around? What happens if you can't land and you have to go around? You need a lot of thrust to make that go around because you're basically doing another takeoff, right? So
right.
The critical phase of flight, especially for transport aircraft, is takeoff and landings, and that's where you find usually, if you look at aviation history of engine failures or malfunctions, that's where those happen, is in those critical phases of flight, either on a takeoff or a go-around, because that is a lot of torque. It's like mashing your foot down on the gas pedal of your car as you're trying to merge on the freeway. But think about merging on the freeway and the traffic's moving at 100 miles an hour. Like, you're just hammering down to try to get up to speed. Well, it's the same thing. I mean, you're putting a lot of stress on those aircraft engines on takeoff. Once they climb, and once you kind of, what we say, you set climb power or cruise power, you've kind of got the cruise control on. You know, the engine's just humming along and everything's fine. You've got plenty of what we call potential energy. So your altitude is energy. So if you start losing an engine, maybe one or two engines at altitude, well, then we can trade energy. You can descend and use that energy from altitude to maintain lift. And all of our pilots know how to do that. That's pretty basic stuff. It's just like learning to fly a 172 or a Cessna 152, and they literally pull the engine to idle at altitude, and they go, all right, you just lost your engine. What do you do? Well, I turn into a glider, and it actually works just fine. You're just trading energy. You're trading altitude for airspeed, and you're using that energy of the altitude to maintain flight. So the answer to the question, if they lost one engine, that would, and at altitude, I think they were around 20,000 feet. I don't think a major factor. That's why I think the big, like, the everyone's asking is what happened, because to have a four engine aircraft all of a sudden come out of the sky, I mean, that's something catastrophic. You know, that's not to speculate, but you know, you're thinking like the first thing you would be thinking is like midair. You know, like, did another aircraft collide with them? Well, there's been no reports of another aircraft hitting them. Right. You know, so what could have happened? Some type of catastrophic failure? Wow. You know, I don't know. I don't know what happened, if there was something inside the aircraft, if there was some structural failure.
Right.
Those are things that it's just like the Marine Corps does, and we've talked about so unfortunately on this show, is the first thing they do is they secure those sites, and the aviation experts get there and start to figure out what happened. The other thing the Marine Corps is simultaneously doing is taking care of those 16 service members' families. So there's lots of things going on right now in the Marine Corps aviation side, unfortunately not in a good way, because they're having to deal with this tragedy.
Right.
But they're also going to do it methodically,
right,
not only for the families, but they're going to do it methodically for the mishap, so we can figure out what exactly happened, and hopefully they can learn from it and then figure that out so that this never happens again in the KC-130 community.
But the bottom line is if it was simply an engine, you know, failure, then as you said, you guys are all schooled in terms of getting that back down to the deck. What does it tell you?
I think for a KC-130 for four engine aircraft, it would be just, you'd probably, for one engine, you'd just shut it down. You'd probably be fine.
But even
depending on how heavy they were,
there was evidently the reading I've done on it, and there's not much information, but the Marine Corps was notified by the FAA after they lost it on radar, not because of some kind of distress call. That's pretty disturbing as well, yes?
Yeah, that's the you took the words out of my mouth. That's very disturbing if the pilots never made a radio call.
So, yeah.
Because that, you know, it sounds so almost World War II-ish, but you say mayday, 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 or pan, 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 and you're declared an emergency. You know, I'm at this altitude, I'm descending, I'm heading for this airfield. I mean, those are words that you say that everyone stops and they literally clear airspace below you. The FAA vectors traffic and that you are the top priority. And this isn't just for military. This is in the aviation community in the FAA. Is you say mayday, mayday, mayday. You say the word pan, pan, pan. You say the word emergency. I'm declaring an emergency. There's no more rules. Right. It is all about you getting the aircraft on the ground safely and saving the aircraft, if able, but mainly saving the crew and the people on board. they clear everything away from you. They vector, they say, if you watch a movie solely, that is right. Literally, what do you need? We are here for you. Where do you want to go? There's this runway off your left. There's this one. I got Teterboro at your, right. 1 o'clock, 5 miles. What do you need us to do? Clear it. And they will. They will literally clear everything and open runways up to make sure that you can find some safe place to land that. So to not have the ability to make a radio call, Mac, the word you used is really scary. It's disturbing. It's like what could have happened for them to not have that time to make a radio call?
Right. All right. Well, look, I know you're working this morning. First of all, as always, thank you for coming on and making us smart. Aviation is, for a lot of us, is a world we watch, but don't really understand the inner workings. And you come on afterwards and I get all kinds of cool email to talk about. I love the way you guys talk about this stuff. You talk about it as business. You don't speculate. You weigh different factors. And I find the discussion very respectful, but also very informative. And so let me pass those along to you. Thank you for doing this. You're always awesome about doing this and a complete professional when you do it. So thanks for this. And I'm sure as more, information comes out about it, we'll have you back on and just get your thoughts on it. But, again, another, not a good day, in the Marine Corps, as we, mourn the loss of, 16 Marines, who are on their way to work someplace doing something. And, we'll certainly find out more about them in the days to come. But thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, my friend. I'll talk to you soon. Semper Fidelis.
There you have it. That is Kurt Knowles, our aviation explainer in chief, who comes on and total pro. And so again, our thoughts and prayers are certainly with 16 families who won't have somebody walking through the door. Anyway, we're late. Chris Woodbird is supposed to join us. We'll get Woody on the phone. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.